We podcast at fsrn.org. You can email us your feedback, questions, and story ideas to comments at fsrn.org. Today's newscast was produced by Monica Lopez and Tina Gysi. Our Washington, D.C. editor is Leanne Caldwell, and our headlines editor is Shannon Young. Our technical production team at KPFA in Berkeley includes Antonio Ortiz and Puck Lowe. From KPFK in L.A., I'm Aura Bogado.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI in New York, where the time is 7 o'clock. Time once again for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. A Billy Bomb for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood. Bundy Bo!
Oh boy, it's a good thing this isn't television. What we have to go through to get things to work around here. It's Off the Hook, another exciting edition here on this Wednesday evening as we prepare to enlighten you on what's going on in the world of high technology and low intelligence and all sorts of other neat things going on. Hey, I had a very positive experience today. Well, first let me introduce people. We've got Redbird over there. Wait a minute, now you have no microphones this week.
Good evening.
There you go. Mike on the other side of the room.
Hi.
And somewhere in the world is Bernie S.
Yes, I'm in Scranton, Pennsylvania, on a landline.
Well, that's different for you, and you sound pretty good. The change has done you well.
Must be one of those good old step-by-step switches they use up here in Scranton.
Oh, I remember the step-by-step switches. Yes, those were the days. What I was saying was I had a positive experience today. I took the subway train. I was on the L line on First Avenue, and it had one of those little signs, you know, that said next train in 7 minutes, et cetera, has the two things.
You're not going to say it was accurate.
It was accurate. Not only was it accurate, but I heard an announcement. I was standing on the subway platform, and this big voice came booming in saying the next train will be the next 8th Avenue bound train will be arriving in approximately 7 minutes. And I could understand every word of it. And then, to make it even better, I heard that same voice on the other side of the platform announcing the train that was going to Brooklyn for the other people. I could still hear it, but it was obviously geared for those people. And they actually not only were able to make the announcement legible, they were able to direct it at the appropriate people. And on top of everything else, all the trains that she was advertising and the signs were advertising came exactly when they said they were going to do. Now, I know this might seem like a simple thing to people in other parts of the world, but to us, this is like the second coming of Christ. It really is.
Are you sure you weren't in another city?
No, I was. And the other thing was, the train wasn't even that loud. It was almost like the train was in a different city because for some reason, and this is something no one has ever been able to answer me, trains in New York City are louder than any place else. Why do they have to be so loud?
It's an old system, you know?
It's an old system, fine, but it's rails, it's wheels. Those are new train cars. Why can't they be quieter? No one can explain this. No one has a... See, that's the kind of noise I get from people. they just don't know. So anyway, I had to head uptown. I had to do all kinds of things today. I'd like you guys to meet the newest member of my family. This is the phone I had a brief affair with when I was down in Brazil and became obsessed with bringing it up here to New York. And I got to tell you, this phone is impossible to get. This is the Nokia E70. And I don't know why. I just want to fit in. All I've ever wanted to do in my life is just be like everybody else. But it seems that no matter what I decide I want, it always has to be inaccessible. And this phone was impossible to get. I was looking for it online. I called Nokia. They said, yeah, we discontinued that phone. It's a great phone, though. We don't know why we discontinued it. It's really good. Good luck finding it. I went to eBay and saw it there for all kinds of outrageous sums. I saw it in various cellular phone stores. Here's the thing. Whenever you buy something online, you have to look up the name of the place you're buying it from. Just put it into Google and see what kind of reviews they've gotten. Almost every single instance, the people who were selling these phones or the stores that were selling these phones were completely being trashed by the people who had done business with them. These people are the biggest ripoff artists ever. They will not send you what you paid for. They'll rip you off. They'll send you defective merchandise. You kind of don't want to go with people like that. And I almost did several times. Thankfully, people give negative feedback, and it really is educational. I was able to find one person.
You've described 99% of my experiences on eBay, by the way.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I've never had a bad experience on eBay. I really haven't. I'm lucky, I guess. But I did find one person on eBay who was selling this phone. However, there was a little catch. It didn't come with a battery. It didn't come with the back of the phone, the little thing that clips over the battery. It didn't come with a charger or a manual or, I imagine, a warranty or anything like that. But it was about half the price that it normally would be.
Those are usually important things.
Yeah, well, they are. But I figured, you know, I could get a battery. But no, the battery was – I went to all these stores on the island asking, and people were like, hey, where'd you get that kind of a phone? It's like, you know, it's just a phone. It's just really – something that that I thought was normal, but apparently it's really bizarre and weird. So anyway, the point is, I finally got the thing. I finally went all the way up to the Nokia store in Manhattan, which apparently is the only place in the world where I could get a battery for this thing. And now I introduce you to my new Nokia E70 phone, which looks really cool, I think.
Oh God.
Well, okay, I'm going to change all that, obviously. But I'm gonna pass it around, and as you can see, it's what they call a candy bar phone. And as soon as I figure out how to open it up myself, there's a little keyboard there. See, isn't that cool?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're not sold, but it's better than the iPhone. I'll tell you that right now. So yeah, I had to run up there and get that. Then I had to also go and get another region-free DVD player. For some reason, I have the worst luck with DVD players.
I didn't
players.
Do anything, and I'm recording a sound clip here.
You're recording a sound clip? I just handed you the phone. How did you do that?
You know.
Ugh. Well, stop doing that. We're recording the show as it is. We don't need to record it on a phone.
Emmanuel?
Yes, Bernie.
I just looked up this phone that you were describing. It was actually released in October 2005. I'm not one to talk about old cell phones because mine's about 10 years old. But what particular features made you go to so much effort to track down this particular phone?
Well, after a while, it sort of became just an obstinate struggle to do what people were telling me I couldn't do. So I sort of lost track of what the actual features were. But I think it's really cool that it flips open and there's a full keyboard there. It's got a very nice screen. It can do a lot of things as far as messaging, email, all kinds of wireless things.
My phone's 10 years old. It does those things.
I think if we put a little competition between the two phones, you'll see that mine.
I want a handicap then.
Yeah, mine will beat yours handily.
The other thing it can do is beep on the air.
It can beep. It can do all. It can ring. One thing that I really like, which I guess more phones do these days, is using MP3s as ringtones. Like you just make your own ringtone. You know, who buys ringtones? Everybody out there is buying ringtones. It's a big source of income to the music industry now. Ringtones. How does anybody justify paying to make your phone ring? Has anyone in this room, and be honest, ever purchased a ringtone?
No.
You're smirking though, Redbird. So are you sure?
Absolutely sure.
Even like completely under the influence.
I'm smirking because it's such an absurd concept, but not, you know.
What do people pay for these things? It's a huge
amount.
99
yes.
cents.
Bernie.
Like
it is a source of hundreds of millions of dollars of revenue for wireless carriers, these ringtones. And unfortunately, wireless carriers often make it hard for you to put your own ringtones on there. Like some won't let you use MP3s or write your own ringtones. Mm-hmm. But as some of our listeners may have heard a couple of weeks ago, the most popular ringtone in Spain was the president of Spain telling Hugo Chavez
not the president of Spain.
Yeah, the king of Spain.
Yes, the king of Spain. What did I say?
You said the president.
Yes, I'm sorry. I meant the king of Spain, Juan Carlos, I believe, telling Hugo Chavez, the ostensibly the president of Venezuela, to shut up at some conference. And that became the most downloaded ringtone. Hundreds of millions of people had downloaded this and paid for it.
You know, I saw the video where he told, you know, he said shut up. And first of all, obviously it's not in English, but second of all, like, it, you know, I can't even picture that as a ringtone. I mean, it wasn't even that impressive. It was just somebody getting annoyed and saying,
I think somebody
said
it to music, and that's what made it even more appealing.
You know, here's the interesting thing. It's not actually that. It's not actually the king on the ringtone, because apparently it's illegal to commercialize the king's voice in Spain. So it's an actor saying, will you please shut up or something?
Oh, really?
In the same like tone of voice.
It's illegal to impersonate?
Can impersonate the king.
It's illegal to use the king's voice?
You can't sell the king's voice.
You can't, but you can sell the king's voice in other countries, can't you? I could sell the king's voice.
Maybe.
I've never thought I'd say that phrase, but yeah, it's kind of weird.
So basically it's a new song whose sole lyrics are shut up, and it has nothing to do with the king at all.
Okay, the point is people are paying for ringtones, which I think is the stupidest thing ever. And the thing is, you have to pay a second time if you get another phone, or if you change or run out of ringtones or things like that. I will never do that. I will never do that. One thing, though, that is kind of interesting, and let's see if this actually works. This is what Redbird was spending a half hour trying to figure out before is how to get the CD player to work.
It was like 5 minutes.
Okay, but just to get it to work was a feat.
If you explain it, it's going to sound like we're morons, but the CD player is pretty absurd.
Okay, well, we can explain it later. But there should be a voice that that joins us as soon as I hit this button. And there isn't, because apparently that button doesn't control it. So I guess I have to hit this button over here. And that doesn't do anything. Didn't you? Hang on.
We'd like to remind our American tourist friends that you are almost certainly talking too loud.
Okay. Well, that's not the one that was supposed to play. It skipped over the first one for some reason. But that's the lady. That's the lady who does the London Underground subway announcements. That's the same voice.
Does that actually get announced anywhere?
Well, I wish that they played the first one, because that's a nice normal recording. Maybe the second one will be a normal recording. Let's see.
Passengers are reminded that a smile is actually a friendship signal, not a sign of weakness.
No, that's not a normal one either. You see, what she did was went online. Basically, her name is Emma Clark. It's kind of funny, because where I almost grew up, the library out by me is...
Were you almost...
Well, I tried my best, and it just didn't take. Emma Clark Library. It's a different Emma Clark, not named after her, but it's kind of weird that it's the same name. But the woman behind the gentle, even voice, which warns London's subway commuters to mind the gap, was fired after telling a newspaper she thought the transit network was dreadful. Emma Clark has been recording messages for London's sprawling subway network, popularly known as the Tube, since 1999. And in addition to warning passengers to watch their step in walking between subway cars and the platform, she also reads the train's stops, tells Londoners how long they have to wait until their next ride, and delivers service updates. Transport for London is the body responsible for running the subway, and they said that Clark was fired for telling the Daily Mail that she avoided using the subway whenever possible. The thought of being stuck in a tube with strangers for minutes on end and having to listen to endless repeated messages of my own voice fills me with horror, she told the paper. Minutes on end, that's not so bad, minutes on end. She said using the service every day had been dreadful. The paper also featured Clark's website, which hosts a series of spoof tube announcements, including one warning a passenger not to stare at a woman's chest, and another telling American tourists, you are almost certainly talking too loud. Transport for London noted that some of the spoof announcements were quite funny, but the spokesman there said Clark's attack on the subway had crossed the line. We wouldn't employ someone to promote our services who simultaneously criticizes those services, but her voice can still be heard in the subway cars until a replacement is found.
She is in a unique situation, though. Nobody else could make those claims.
No. But what we're going to do is play a few of these throughout the course of the show, and you can figure out yourself if they're real or fake.
Customers are reminded that smoking is not permitted anywhere on the London Underground.
I think that's real.
Well, they're all real.
Well, no, I think that's a real announcement that plays on the tube.
Ah.
Because there was nothing funny about that.
No smoking on the tube?
Yeah, I think that's a real regulation.
I think that's kind of funny.
Maybe.
Do not drop litter on the train. Please use the tramps provided.
Okay, now that might sound funny to us because of the use of the word tramps, but apparently over there, tramps has a totally different meaning. And I guess that's where you would put trash if you found yourself on a London subway car.
Even in the United States, we still put our trash in the trams.
Well, maybe you do, but that's...
But there are plenty of tramps on the subway in Philadelphia.
Do we really want to go down this road, Bernie? All right. So we have all kinds of interesting stories here tonight on this edition of Off the Hook. This is interesting. Someone sent this in to us pretty recently. A security flaw in Passport Canada's website has allowed easy access to the personal information, including social insurance numbers, dates of birth, and driver's license numbers of people applying for new passports. The breach was discovered last week by an Ontario man completing his own passport application. He found he could easily view the applications of others by altering one character in the internet address displayed by his web browser. I was expecting the site to tell me that I couldn't do that, said Jamie Lanning of Huntsville. I'm just curious about these things, so I tried it, and boom, there was somebody else's name and somebody else's data. Well, I don't know, that's Canada, but if you did that here, Mike, what do you think would happen?
If you changed one number in the passport application?
If you tried this kind of experimentation.
I think you'd be arrested.
Probably.
Or at least, like, threatened with arrest. You certainly wouldn't get nice articles written about you in the Globe and Mail.
And this is a nice article. Contrast this with the article last week about the hackers getting the information from, what was that company's name?
That was Convio.
Convio. Because they were negligent in handling it, and hackers got blamed even though hackers hadn't really done anything. It was just lying out there for anybody to look at. An internet data security expert and professor at the University of Ottawa, Carlisle Adams, says this is exactly how identity theft happens. If you want to take out a mortgage, for example, this is the type of information the bank is going to ask for to make sure you're really the person you're claiming to be. Then all of a sudden, there's a mortgage in someone else's name.
Now, it's such a simple thing that I don't believe for a second that this guy was the first person to discover it. So, I mean, the claims are true. This is exactly how identity theft happens. And, of course, if you're committing identity theft, you're not going to go public with this information, which is kind of nice that, you know, they wrote such a good article because the person did come forward with the information. He obviously wasn't using it for fraudulent purposes and had an actual concern for, you know, the public. And that doesn't happen all that often.
Jason Marsden, a Brampton resident whose social insurance and driver's license numbers were accessed by Mr. Lanning, said he was, quote unquote, totally surprised to learn that his personal information was so readily available. I like to just, there's contact with some random guy. If you read the disclaimer on the website, it's supposed to use high-tech security, he said in an interview. You'd think it wouldn't be that bloody simple. He sounds a little peeved, and I would be too.
Now, here's the thing. They asked the spokesperson for Passport Canada, and he said, yeah, our website was down on Friday, but that was for another reason. And then they said they fixed the security breach, but when the reporter went and tried it, they found that it was still there. These people clearly, like, don't know how to run a website.
Well, the person who's talking and the person who's running the website are two different people.
That is true. That's
no, but
true.
The person who's running the website is the one who doesn't know what
well,
they're
well,
doing.
Well, exactly. That person's on vacation somewhere, doesn't even know about this.
It's possible.
You know, it's entirely possible. But the good thing about this story, though, is that it's being reported in a somewhat accurate way, and the blame is being placed on the people running the system, which is exactly where it should be placed. Now, contrast that to a story that took place here in New York. It's rather of a different nature, but still, I think it speaks to attitude. This guy, a freelance photographer, Carlos Alejo, says he was late for a business meeting when he spotted a wallet lying abandoned on a subway platform bench. He picked it up and put it in his bag with every intention of later finding its owner. But as he rushed aboard the number 6 train last Wednesday at Grand Central, he felt a hand on his shoulder. "Where's the wallet?" said an undercover cop. That's right. After he gave the officers the wallet, he was frisked, made to put his hands against the wall and hand over his identification so they could do a criminal history check. "It wasn't even crossing my mind what was inside the wallet. I was trying to get to my appointment," he said. "It made me feel like I was a criminal, like I did something wrong. The look on the cop's face was like he already knew that I was guilty. He said, 'Don't lie to me. Just tell me how many times you've been arrested.'" He kept saying to him, "That just stabbed me right there in the heart. I was so ashamed. My face went red. People were looking. I've been in this country 17 years and never felt discriminated against until that day." That's
really absurd.
It is absurd. And I've heard about this happening where if you find something in the subway system here in New York and you take it, if you find it on the bench or something like that, if you don't do exactly what they want you to do, which I guess is take it to them, find the undercover cop or find the subway platform guy
Last year, we went through this on the air. I found a cell phone on the subway, and we were calling the owner on the air, right? I mean, so this is a
but
perfect—
But you didn't get arrested for taking the cell phone.
I didn't get arrested, and I think Mike ultimately found the person who was—
Yeah, I met the guy.
We had a tearful reunion of the phone. It was incredible.
So, I mean, it's really the entrapment—
Entrapment. I mean, it's so bizarre that you're being entrapped for doing something good. You know, you're taking something that has been lost and presumably trying to find the owner by taking it and looking up the information. That's how generally you return things to people. You have to have them in your possession for a little bit of time. True, he could have been stealing it. That's part of the risk of leaving your property on a bench. Someone could take it. But to just assume that if somebody does that, they're guilty of something. And I assume there's all kinds of profiling going on here that makes certain people get questioned more than others. It's very unhealthy. And I don't think people are going to be doing very many good deeds as a result of this.
Yeah, I mean, the judges agree with you. These convictions are getting thrown out. But it doesn't seem to stop the police.
No.
The program is called Operation Lucky Bag. and I think you raise a good point that if people learn about this program, they might be afraid to pick up, you know, honest people might start being afraid to pick up wallets and things left on the subway, leaving only the thieves as the ones who are going to do it. So it's not good for people who lose things.
Definitely not. Definitely
Emmanuel.
Not. Yes, Bernie.
I was unclear from you from the what part of the story you read to me. How long was it after he picked up the wallet and put it in his bag that he was approached by police?
It was right away.
It was right away.
He was getting onto a train.
Basically, it's a stakeout.
Hmm? Yeah.
Stakeouts on trains.
So if you see anything, it's kind of like, you know, those countries, those legendary countries where if you pick up a piece of bread from the street, you get your hand chopped off. And that's why there's no theft in that particular place. It's sort of the same mentality. Don't take anything that doesn't belong to you or you will be punished, even if you have good intentions.
You know, I really think that the police have better things to do.
Especially in New York City.
No, you're both making a mistake, which is a very common mistake made by people who don't live in New York City. You're assuming that the New York Police Department has finite resources and that if they can spend time on this, they'll stop spending time on something else worthwhile. No, this is not true. The New York Police can spend as much time on as many things as they want and still have more police left to do other silly things.
Where do you get that information?
It, from experience, it seems to be true. I've never seen them run out.
Well, if you doubt that, come to the New Year's celebration in Times Square, and I'm sure you'll see more cops than you've ever seen anywhere before at any time.
Right, and there'll still be thousands more somewhere else wasting their time on something else.
In fact, that might be a good night to pull off that caper we were talking about, you know, in another part of town.
But it won't be, because there'll be police there as well.
No, to demonstrate the point, though, all the cops will be in Times Square. We'll be in that other place we talked about doing what we said. And you'll see how many cops, if somebody blows the whistle, how many cops will show up there.
Yes.
And I don't want to get more specific than that because I think we might get in trouble if I do. But but the point is that there are a lot, definitely a lot. And some people will say that's a good thing. Some people say we need more because we're just so out of control. And when you tell people that enough times, then they begin to act like that, and that's what they're used to. Okay, here's something from we have another announcement? Let's hear one more.
Here we are again, crammed into a sweaty tube carriage. And today's Wednesday. Only two more days before you can binge drink yourself into a state of denial about the mediocrity of your life. Oh, for goodness sake. If you're female, smile at the bloke next to you and make his day. He's probably not had sex for months.
Well, how did she know it was Wednesday? All right, the voice of the London Underground there.
You know, I don't know. If I was running the subway system and she was the person doing my recordings, I would kind of be upset.
Well, okay. Then you would fire her too.
Well.
All right. Moving back over to England, this reader, or listener, Zen, writes in, any room for a couple of million sane people in your country? The lunatics are running the asylum over here, I'm afraid. We need to get out. God help us all. What is Zen referring to? Well, a teenager has been given an antisocial behavior order that bans him from promoting his criminal behavior online. Police discovered the 17-year-old from Norfolk was posting comments and photographs on the Bebo social networking site glorifying his exploits. At Norwich Youth Court, the district judge banned the youth from using the internet to publish material that is, quote, threatening or abusive, unquote, and, quote, promotes criminal activity, unquote. ASPOs is what they call this as part of Newspeak, antisocial behavior, ASPO. They're usually placed on offenders to ban them from frequenting certain places or carrying out particular activities. But this is the first case to come to light in which someone has been given an ASBO to stop them using the World Wide Web. The court heard that a police investigation found the boy had posted offensive comments against officers and photographs of drug taking. Constable Tim Chapman of the Norfolk Police said the comments on the Bebo website demonstrated his attitude towards offending the community and the police. The boy was given the 2-year ASBO after admitting a series of offenses, including stealing a vehicle and possession of cannabis. What do you guys think of this? You think if there's evidence the guy actually committed these crimes, that this is an appropriate way of dealing with it?
Well, I think he's screwing himself over in the long run because mm-hmm. in terms of, I don't know, I mean, in terms of employment in the future, who's going to hire him if they see that sort of stuff online? I mean, most employers do internet searches before they hire people. Who's going to hire him if they see that kind of stuff?
Well, do you think he's using his real name? I guess he is. People are dumb.
If it's this obvious. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why, you know, he's probably not doing himself a favor by posting all this stuff. But at the same time, I don't know that it's...
Well, if he actually did commit these crimes, why don't they charge him with the crimes instead of telling him he can't talk about this?
Right. Well, he should be able to say what he wants. That's kind of a First Amendment thing, but...
Which I don't have in England.
I will give tips to criminals. Don't post photographs of yourself committing crimes on the internet. But beyond this specific case, these antisocial behavior orders, am I really supposed to call them ASBOs?
Yeah, ASBO is the right word for it. All right,
these ASBOs are becoming this really weird tool for law enforcement and the prosecution system in the UK, where they're able to put sort of arbitrary restrictions on people. And, if our listeners are interested, they can do some research. They're really weird and really problematic in a lot more ways than just this one case.
I would go a step beyond what Mike suggested and advise people committing crimes not only to not post your photographs online, don't take photographs. What in God's name are you doing? You're committing a crime? You're taking photographs of yourself committing a crime? Photographs tend to be looked at by people. That's why they're called photographs.
Don't give anybody advice like that.
It's good advice. I mean, no matter how you slice it, it's good advice. Okay, I take it a step further. Don't commit crimes. Is that what you want me to say?
It's good.
All right, fine.
Who's going to listen to that advice?
Yeah, coming from me, I think that won't mean too much. Did we talk about this, about the Skype encryption and the German police? No?
Not yet.
Okay, well, German police are unable to decipher the encryption used in the internet telephone software Skype to monitor calls by suspected criminals and terrorists. That's according to Germany's top police officer. Skype, as you know, allows users to make telephone calls over the internet from their computer to other Skype users free of charge. Law enforcement agencies and intelligence services have used wiretaps since the telephone was invented. But in fact, Alexander Graham Bell was one of the first people to be wiretapped. I don't know if people know that. Yeah, he was a suspicious character at the time.
That's how we have the recording of him talking to Watson.
Yeah, Watson, come here. I need you. They didn't know what he meant by that. They didn't know what he wanted Watson to come there for. And so they launched a whole big thing into that. Anyway, implementing the wiretaps is much more complex in the modern telecommunications market, where the providers are often foreign companies. The encryption with Skype telephone software creates grave difficulties for us, said the president of Germany's Federal Police Office, BKA. We can't decipher it. That's why we're talking about source telecommunications surveillance. That is, getting to the source before encryption or after it's been decrypted.
So here's what I think about that. First of all, there's no public information as to what type of encryption Skype uses or how they implement it, as far as I know. I know that this was the case a number of years ago. But second of all, why should we necessarily believe a statement like that?
That they can't decrypt
it? Right. I mean, first of all, it's entirely technically feasible that they can't. And, you know, any reasonable implementation of, you know, a good encryption algorithm should have that effect. But at the same time, I mean, you know, it's hearsay. That if you wanted to make your criminals think that this was a secure channel,
you think it could be a trap.
If you wanted to make criminals think that this was a secure channel, you might say that we can't decrypt
it. So yet another tip to criminals today. If you think that Skype is secure, this might just be something that's being said to make you believe that. So
Emmanuel,
don't. Yes, Bernie, go ahead.
I mean, I don't think any of our listeners would think that our government or any other government would plant false information in the media to further their goals.
No, we're not suggesting that. Are we suggesting that? I hope we're not suggesting that.
Personally, I think it's inconceivable to me that the NSA has not looked at the Skype encoding method and done work with it, whether they've succeeded in determining how the encryption algorithm works or not, I don't know. But it seems beyond belief that such a popular voice communications medium that is encrypted, that they haven't looked at it. That's just beyond belief.
I think the best advice comes from our friend Rob, who on a previous show had mentioned that, you know, he obviously doesn't know of any way that the Skype traffic can be decrypted, but you should only think of Skype as being as secure as a regular phone line. I mean, there's no reason to think that it's any more secure based on the information that we have, and there's no reason to think that it's any less secure at the same time, but don't depend on it. If you have something private to say, don't depend on that as protecting that
information. Or get a crypto phone.
Or get a crypto phone, you know?
And I like to see more things like the crypto phone come into being so people actually know they're secure unless they're being listened to in the same room. So that's always that possibility.
Which is usually the easiest way to do it.
It is. It is. Just planting a bug or just having somebody there with ears, all of that is possible. But here's something else concerning eavesdropping. Cisco has confirmed it's possible to eavesdrop on remote conversations using Cisco VoIP phones. It's voice over IP phones. In its security response, Cisco says an attacker with valid extension mobility authentication credentials could cause a Cisco unified IP phone configured to use the extension mobility feature to transmit or receive a real-time transport protocol, RTP, audio stream. And the thing is, people talk like this all day long or work for these companies.
You know, here's the thing. I actually understood one of those acronyms, okay, which puts me like ahead of probably in most of our audience.
And you get to explain it.
But I still don't know what the sentence means.
I can explain what this means.
Okay, go ahead, Bernie.
In a nutshell, this means that if the hotel you're staying in has Cisco VoIP phones in it, and they're becoming increasingly popular hotel room phones, someone anywhere in the world with the right knowledge and software, and with the right and with a poorly configured hotel phone system, which is more often than not, I'm sure, anyone anywhere in the world with the right software and tools can listen not only to your phone conversations in that hotel room, but remotely enable the microphone in that phone so that they can hear everything going on in your hotel room. And that's what that means.
Now, this was brought to light at a hacker conference known as TorCon in San Diego. Two hackers, John Kindervag and Jason Ostrom, said they were able to access a hotel's financial and corporate network, and they were able to record other phone calls. The hackers used penetration tests propounded by a tool called VoIP Hopper, which mimics the Cisco data packets sent at three-minute intervals and then trades a new Ethernet interface, getting the PC, which the hackers switched in place of the hotel phone, into the network running the voice over IP. So that's really fascinating. This information comes from Network World, and it's scary if this is possible. Imagine what people with actual access to resources can do with this. Very scary. Something to, and one thing you don't have to worry about at the Hotel Pennsylvania where the Hope Conference is, they do not have VoIP phones there. So I don't think that'll be a problem. Just good old-fashioned wiretaps.
There is an easy solution to this, however.
What is that?
If you're worried about such a thing in your hotel room, you can unplug the phone when you don't want to be listened to. And then when you need to make the call and don't mind the call being listened to if you're really paranoid, just plug it in at that point. And if you're really paranoid, go somewhere else and use a payphone or a cryptophone or something.
Yes, I think we're pushing people into the cryptophone world a lot more these days. Okay, time for another London Underground announcement. Is it real or is it fake?
Passengers are reminded that, like all voiceover artists, I probably look nothing like you imagine and may turn out to be somewhat of a disappointment.
I don't know. I think that might be a real announcement.
Do we know what she looks like?
No, but I'm pretty sure I heard that on the train last time I was over there. Let's play one more, and then we'll read a another interesting story.
Let customers off the train first, please.
Oh, she sounded angry there.
Wait, at that point, are you not a customer? Is it possible not to be a customer?
Yeah, why is she calling them customers and not passengers? Isn't that weird? Is that how travelers are referred to overseas, customers?
It's a very expensive system.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And does that mean that if you see someone who's not a customer, i.e. a transit employee, or a policeman or somebody like that, you don't have to let them off the train first.
What is her name?
Emma Clark.
Emma, with an E on the end?
Yes, at the end of the Clark, not the E, Emma.
Yeah.
Let's hear another while you're looking
see
that
if
up.
I'm disappointed by your appearance.
Okay.
Mind the gap.
Okay, that one, that's the most famous one. Of course, the original Mind the Gap recording was done by a guy, and I think that one is more classic than this one, but I certainly have heard that a few hundred thousand times. Okay, one more announcement, then we're going to go into a story, and then by that time, maybe Bernie will know what she looks like.
I'm already looking at a bunch of pictures of Emma Clark.
Okay, so
I don't know if any of them are the right Emma Clark. Here, together with the BBC... Well, there's a lot of attractive-looking Emma Clarks on... if you go Google the image for Emma Clark, but I'm going to keep looking to see if I can find out for sure if she's
okay,
the one.
Well, you keep up your quest, and I'm sure there's an email address there somewhere, so you can pursue this even further. Let's hear one more announcement, and then we'll get into this other story.
Would passengers filling in answers on their Sudokus please accept that they are just crosswords for the unimaginative and are not in any way more impressive just because they contain numbers?
Okay. Amen.
I have to agree with that.
Oh, wow. Thank you. Thank you for saying that. Okay, the same microwave radiation that reheats pizza can now be used to fry the electrical systems in cars. Stop me. Yes, this is a great day for technological progress.
First of all, that first sentence that you read is wrong once you read the rest of the article, because it's a totally different frequency that they're talking
well, first
about.
First of all, I didn't finish the sentence. Let me start it over again.
I'm already upset about
since
it.
Since you ruined it. The same microwave radiation that reheats pizza can be used to fry the electrical systems in cars, stopping them dead in their tracks.
It would be useful if you could do both at the same time.
It would be. If you had a pizza in the car, that would be something. Emitted from a rooftop device, the radiation could be used by law enforcement officers to put an end to dangerous car chases or by military personnel as a non-lethal way of disabling vehicles that get too close for comfort. The idea is to warn an automobile some distance away from a high-value target like a military barrack or a communications center. If they don't comply, you just zap them and it prevents them from coming closer. Of course, what if it's at the bottom of a hill? You ever think of that? Yeah.
What?
Can't stop gravity. Well, if the car is coming down a hill.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's why you build your high-value... What do they call them? High-value objects? Whatever, you build them at the top of hills.
Uh-huh. High-value targets. Well, yeah, they're the ones calling it a target. Okay, so Redbird, why is this
not
accurate?
So they were saying they were using something in the 300 megahertz range, is that right?
Okay, ovens typically operate at 2.45 gigahertz,
yeah.
Whereas the high-power car-stopping system is at 300 megahertz.
Yeah, first of all, it doesn't necessarily make that much sense to me. It's possible... Mm-hmm. But, Ed, what do you think? I mean, it doesn't make that much sense to me.
It's highly doubtful. I've heard of these things being developed over the past, like, 20 years, and it hasn't really been deployed yet, for all I know. They keep saying, oh, yeah, we'll have it any day now. Kind of like flat-screen like TVs you can hang on your wall were, like, around for, like, 40 years before it really happened. So...
Right.
I don't think it's ready for prime time yet, and the 300 megahertz signals that they were talking about are nowhere close to microwave signals. Those are 2400 megahertz. I found a picture of the Emma Clark.
Oh, good. I'm happy for you.
And I'm not disappointed.
Well, she'll be happy to hear that, I'm sure.
She's a. It's on a.
You know, our listeners know how to use Google if they're that fascinated.
Yeah, exactly. See, you know what? She looks a lot like Amy Goodman, only. She's smiling.
Okay. Well, I've seen Amy smile, so
okay.
All right. Maybe I'll get you a picture of that and you can compare. Getting back to the microwave story, though, they claim it's the same kind of energy used in microwave ovens. I don't know what that means, same kind of energy, but at a different frequency. I'm sorry, go ahead.
It's part of the electromagnetic spectrum. That's what they mean. That's as close as they can get.
Isn't every frequency a part of the... Okay. There are no biological effects, they say. Isn't that nice? We comply with every standard in the literature as far as biological impact. So anyway, as far as the technical aspect of this, correct or not, to disable cars, the device first generates energy that is amplified using a generator. The energy is converted to microwave radiation and then directed by way of a specially designed antenna at the offender in a narrow beam. This sounds like a Star Trek episode. The higher the frequency of the radiation, the more directed the beam, which allows the user to aim the energy at vulnerable car parts, such as light bulb filaments, lug nuts, frame bolts, or a windshield antenna.
It would take an awful lot to burn out a light bulb filament.
Wait, now they're aiming this energy in a narrow beam, but the car is moving.
Yeah, the car is moving. I don't understand. Why would you aim it at a light bulb? What does that get you exactly?
Most of this article doesn't make any sense.
All right. Well, it came from Discovery Channel, so yes, maybe they could do a little more research and tell us what they find out. Here's an article from somebody. Oh, we have another one? Hang on, one more announcement.
Passengers should note that the bearded gentleman's rucksack contains the following items only: some sandwiches, a library card, and a picture of a bare ankle, and is no cause for concern.
Okay.
You're
of course,
allowed to say that sort of thing?
Rucksack means backpack here.
Oh, I'm aware.
Okay.
Well, I didn't know if you were allowed to say that sort of thing.
Say what sort of thing?
I don't know. It seems like people would get upset about that.
Well, people are upset about reality, and this is simply addressing it in a humorous way.
Okay.
Anyway, this listener has done some research into voting machines. Dear 2600, off the hook, I have obtained this information firsthand. I worked in Ohio on the Diebold voting machine conversion in 2005. It was my job to flash upgrade the firmware. Here are the specs. Everybody got a pencil? All right. Processor, 300 megahertz. Memory, 256 megabytes. Operating system, Windows CE with replaced splash screen and Explorer. Encryption, 128-bit. Connectivity, Ethernet, modem, mouse, keyboard, PC MCIA X2. This is where the legalities play havoc. In order for Ohio to be able to use these machines, they needed two copies of each vote, one that stores on a PC MCIA micro drive, and the other has to be a physical copy. A printer is attached and locked inside a plastic case. If either copy is damaged or lost of even a single vote, the whole county's votes are unusable.
Whole counties.
The voting machine is network ready with an Ethernet port. Firmware can be copied with a simple EEPROM reader, but as I said, it is only Windows CE. The EEPROM connection cable is located under the attached printer. An external keyboard can be connected. I will quickly comment on the usability of this machine. They crash regularly, and the password to disable the 128-bit encryption is only 8 numbers, 0 through 9, and always starts with a 1. Now we have only 7 unknown numbers. The encryption software will load as a SysTray application. Disabling it completely would be very simple, even without the password. This password will vary county to county. Keys to unlock the side panels and barrel keys like soda machines and are mounted directly to the panel's door, which is plastic. Back to the firmware, under the attached printer is, as I stated, the EEPROM plug. There is also a factory reset button. This button will reload the standard WinCE interface into RAM and erase the 128-bit encryption and default to 64-bit. Questions are welcome. Agent Glitch, thank you for that information. You guys have any questions for Agent Glitch?
I don't exactly understand the encryption explanation, where what encryption is taking place and where. I just didn't understand the explanation, but I'd be curious to see the firmware.
Well, Agent Glitch, please write in with some further explanation for Redbird.
Can you get a copy of the firmware?
Can you get a copy of the firmware? That's another question.
Maybe I shouldn't ask that.
Well, no, I might as well. We're doing all kinds of criminal conspiracy tonight, so it fits right in with the theme.
Tip to criminals, don't discuss your crimes on the radio.
Who would be stupid enough to do that? All right. Well, I'm very glad people are doing this. I'm glad people are investigating these machines and sending us information that we can then disseminate to the world. And hopefully this will be helpful to somebody. And please, anybody else, write in with your questions or comments, and we'll be happy to spread them around as well. Dear Off the Hook, I'm a New York City listener. Great show. I was videotaping near the United Nations when the W was in town, of course, being George W. Bush. And I was approached by two Secret Service agents who told me that there are people around who are suspicious of me. Kind of scary. Anyway, I heard there are credit card machines that can read credit cards from your wallet. I bet the Secret Service can do the same thing without seeing your wallet, with RFID, perhaps. What do you think? Signed, S. It's interesting because that's the exact same thing that happened to a friend of mine several years ago during one of those UN summits, just walking around, approached by two Secret Service officers saying that his existence was suspicious.
I think the existence of Secret Service agents is suspicious. Who can I report that to?
I don't know.
They're always going around yelling at people. It's very out of the ordinary.
Is it possible to read credit cards from your wallet?
Perhaps. They're encrypted, but I don't know how many of the protocols have been cracked.
Well, can you tell that this person has a gold card, you know, without knowing the number?
I don't think so.
Well, you're talking about the credit cards with RFID.
RFID, right, yeah.
Which I don't have. I don't know
I don't
how
have
many
one
people
either.
Have.
I don't have one.
Mm-hmm. I've got the little blink things.
So you might be at risk.
I might be at risk. Okay, well, I'll consider that when I wander around the UN.
If you had an RFID shielding wallet, you wouldn't have to worry.
All right, I'll consider that too. Here's another letter. You guys are geeks and nerds. Dear sirs, I hope the subject line, which I just read, satisfies your November 29th request for more hate mail. We did request more hate mail. We didn't really get a whole lot.
No, that doesn't count.
I thought that was a compliment, actually.
Yeah, you know, some of us might actually interpret it that way, so it kind of didn't work.
I mean, we appreciate the effort, but no.
All right, well, here are the insults, then. You gentlemen are also incredibly articulate, informed, often entertaining, and easy to understand.
That's a definite insult.
That's a low blow right there. I'm a proud supporter of the station, and your show is one that I listen to regularly. Keep up the good work. This guy just doesn't know when to stop, does he? You've already gotten us, and you just keep hitting.
You'd think that some people would appreciate us, but
I especially enjoy the remote connections with your colleagues via satellite and payphones from faraway places like North Korea. Signed, Tobias.
Or Scranton.
Tobias. I'm not exactly sure how to pronounce that. Yes, Scranton, Pennsylvania. Which do we have to call Bernie back?
Well, I don't know.
Because
you don't have to call me back at all if you don't want.
Well, we have to if we want to take phone calls because we couldn't get you on the appropriate line. Is he on? Can we get him on the appropriate line now?
Well,
I'll have to
hang up on him right now.
All right, Bernie, is that okay?
Yeah, just go hang up.
We're gonna come back. All right, we're gonna come back. We promise this time we won't leave you hanging. And while we're waiting for Bernie to be reconnected, let's hear from our friend over in London with another exciting London Underground announcement.
Please leave the train.
Well, that's rather abrupt, isn't it? How about something a little bit more humorous than that?
Please note that this train will not stop at the next station.
Those are two real announcements in a row. Those are actual announcements that are played on the London Underground. Let's see if we can find one that is not actual.
Residents of London are reminded that there are other places in Britain outside your stinking hole of a city, and that if you remove your heads from your arses for just a couple of minutes, you may realise that the M25 is not the edge of the earth.
Oh, that's the only one we had to censor, because she says a word there that we can't say.
You actually censored
we
that?
Had to, yeah. Okay. Otherwise, it's a $325,000 fine.
It's on that list over there.
Yeah, a list of words
seven
never to
words
say on the
you
air.
Must not use.
I don't think it's wise to have a list of words you can't say on the air in view of the person.
Because they're all going through my head right now.
Exactly.
You have to
exactly.
Really focus. Not
is
to
is Bernie back?
Yes, I'm back. And as a matter of fact, when my phone just rang and I answered it, I heard the first thing I heard was Emma Clark's voice. And I'm looking at her picture as I heard her voice. It was very strange.
You're just fascinated by that picture, aren't you?
She's a pretty woman.
And there you are in Scranton, Pennsylvania, just staring at the computer screen.
Emma Clark, and listening to her voice playing on WBAI.
All right. Our phone number is 212-209-2900, so we have time to take a few phone calls if there's anybody out there with some question or something of interest to say. Here's a question that somebody sent in to us based on what we were talking about last week. You talked about the subject. I was interested and disturbed by the implications of it, and that was, of course, cell phones being able to transmit your location. My question is, would it be possible for a carrier to assemble a list of people based upon their location at a point in time? For example, could they list attendees of a political rally? Bernie, what do you think of that?
Absolutely, it's possible. There's equipment made by a company called Harris Corporation that allows the IDs of phones, the IMEI number, which identifies the handset. It's sort of a small directional antenna thing. They can just point at fairly directional. They can point it at a crowd of people, find out whose phones are on in that group of people, and then do pretty quick research to find out who those people are.
That is definitely scary. All right, let's see if we can squeeze in a phone call or two. And I got to press the button hard. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hey, how are you, folks?
How you doing?
Enjoy it.
Thank you.
Quite regularly. Doing a little research, I came across Emanuel's chilling account of his travails during the Republican coronation of 2004. And I'm writing some fiction, but I like it to be as fact-based as possible. My question is, were the cops, in his experience, making a particular point of videotaping people's faces on the street during... as they were rounding people up and during various demonstrations.
Oh, most definitely, most definitely. You're talking about the Republican convention 2004.
Right.
Yeah, there was a large number of policemen with video cameras, and they were pointing them directly at people. And, of course, the people were videotaping the cops, too. It was kind of a standoff. But then once the arrests were made, they had more videos going and more still photography. So, yeah.
How biometrically applicable is the standard videotape in terms of getting the facial image into some kind of digitized database?
That's a question of how sophisticated the NYPD setup is. I would imagine if they're using state-of-the-art software, it's not
that tough to do.
No.
Yeah.
It's getting easier every day.
Yeah.
Because there's this perceived need that we have to have this.
And I don't know if you folks have seen, they now have this this giant observation tower that's about, three stories in the air at parades and the like with, you know, 360-degree views. They actually were doing field tests of it at Shea Stadium in the parking lot, or maybe they were doing it for real there.
And they had it up in Harlem for a while, too, I think, right?
Oh, there's a couple of them.
Yeah.
They've got, I've seen it just at the St. Patrick's Day parade by the reviewing stand. But the point is they were making a particular come up and get a good nice close-up of people's faces.
Scary.
Now, is this tower something that is manned or womaned at 30 feet, or are there cameras that move around from a 30-foot height?
No, there can actually be someone up there, yeah.
I believe there's somebody up there.
Like a crow's nest.
Yeah.
A ship.
And you know, it says NYPD right on it, but which is of no great comfort.
No.
Well, you hate to think it was somebody else doing that. At least you know who's watching you.
We're from the government, and we're here to help.
All right, it's good. Good reassuring words to hear. Thank you for your call.
Carry on, guys.
Take care.
She doesn't look like Amy Goodman.
All right, let's
That was another picture.
Let's not get into this now. All right. Good evening. You aren't off the hook. Go ahead.
Hi. Could you tell me how much tin foil, aluminum foil, is needed to protect a passport from having the RFID chip scanned?
Just one or two layers should be fine.
Yeah, just wrap it once. I think you'll be okay.
Double wrapping to be extra sure.
Yes.
Thanks.
All right. Good luck.
Not on your head.
No.
Around the passport.
Yeah. Or. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hi. How and where do you get in cryptophones?
How do you get cryptophones? I guess you go to cryptophone.de. Is that the address?
I don't remember the URL, but they're unlocked GSM phones.
Well, Bernie, you have the internet where you are, right?
In Scranton? They just got it in Scranton.
No, I'm saying if you can stop gazing at Emma Clark's face for a moment, maybe you could check out to make sure that cryptophone.de is the actual website.
Right. I will confirm that in about 1 minute.
They are unlocked GSM phones, so if you're in the United States, you have to have a GSM provider, which is most commonly going to be T-Mobile or AT&T. And they run Windows CE, as far as I remember, Pocket PC, whatever they want to call it. Uh-huh. And they're pretty useful. You have to have, you have to be connecting to another cryptophone for it to be effective. But
mm-hmm. Yes, and the
right, of course, obviously. Yeah,
right.
The answer to that question is cryptophone.de, as in Delta Echo.
As in Germany.
The German top-level domain.
Right.
And I've used a cryptophone. It works well, but as Redbird pointed out, you have to be. It's only effectively secure if you're speaking to somebody else with another cryptophone. Right. But you don't actually have to have a physical cryptophone on the other end. There is a free piece of software you can download from that website that allows someone with a multimedia PC with audio when using the sound card to emulate a cryptophone on the other end.
Ah.
You can really call anybody that way, and as long as that computer itself isn't bugged, then you're in good shape.
Also note that it uses the data stream, so you also have to have a data plan. It doesn't use
uses something called circuit switch data, which actually not all carriers support. I don't know if the U.S. carriers support it this month or not. It's always changing, but it might not work.
All right. Hopefully people will get more involved in that. Last couple of messages from our friend over in London.
Thank you for traveling on the Central Line.
Well, that's a real one, isn't it? Yeah, I think we're down to the last three.
Warning, this is an emergency. I've chipped a nail.
Okay. You can also find these announcements. I should give out the URL, shouldn't I? Well, let me play an announcement while I'm looking for the URL.
Would the gentleman in the pinstripe suit and £1,000 glasses, who obviously works in the media, please take one step forward onto the track as the train arrives? Thank you.
Oh, that's a good one right there. It's emmaclark.com. That's Clark with an E. And here is our final announcement of the night.
Would the passenger in the red shirt pretending to read a paper but is actually staring at that woman's chest please stop? You're not fooling anyone, you filthy pervert.
Okay, thank you very much for those London Underground announcements brought to you here on Off the Hook. And that's going to do it for us here tonight. Remember, there are 2,600 meetings coming up this Friday all around the world, and all sorts of other fun things like that. I'll be at the Highline Ballroom for the Carbon Silicon Show. Maybe I'll see you there. Otherwise, next week.
I sigh. There's a conspiracy and trying for a coup. I think we should be free to do what we want to do. You may well roll over, but don't expect me to go along. Hold it, wait a minute. I ain't done nothing wrong. Where will they welcome us if open arms and we are on the run? To some remote island where we can have some fun. What they're trying to sell us is really just a con. Hasn't anybody noticed what's been should say, I shouldn't have to pack up all my bags and move away. The global war on culture started with a song. Hold it, wait a minute. I ain't done nothing wrong. Drew a line into the sandwich you can decide upon. When you wake up in the morning, what side are you on? With some surprise and deep regret, I have to say so.
I love the music they play. Right.
Yeah. All right. So what's going on in New Jersey? Them laying off 200 city workers and all of that. Anyway.